Welcome to the Man Up to Cancer podcast. I'm Trevor Maxwell. I'm a stage 4 colon cancer survivor, and I've got a message for other men. You don't have to go through this alone. What does it mean to man up to cancer? It means reaching out instead of isolating. It means having the courage to accept help along the way. To me, manning up isn't just about being tough. It's about knowing that we're stronger and smarter as a pack than we are as lone wolves. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Man Up to Cancer podcast. This is Trevor coming to you from gloomy Cape Elizabeth, Maine. It is before spring 2024, and I'm pretty miserable. I need some sunshine. I need some warmth. The folks that I'm talking to today, they have a little bit, although they probably shouldn't, which is weird, but they're in Iowa. So I initially reached out to today's guests to be on this show a few years ago. Then my own cancer derailed those plans. So I feel incredibly fortunate to welcome them today. Isaac and Joy Moel are joining me from Iowa City, Iowa. Go Hawkeyes.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Happy to be here.
So Isaac was 23 years old in April of 2019. Is that right? Yes,
that's right.
I'm getting some nods. When he was diagnosed with stage 4 colorectal cancer. And I just want to pause there for a second. Like, those of you who listen to our show, let that sink in. 23. Otherwise healthy, strong, young man facing a stage 4 diagnosis at 23 years old. This is what we talk about when we're talking about the rise in young onset colorectal cancer. He and his tight-knit family have fought this disease together with incredible courage, intelligence, grace, and heart. Welcome to the show again. So to get us started, Isaac, why don't you just let our listeners know what's happening with your cancer right now?
Yeah,
almost
sure.
5 years, right?
Yep. It'll be 5 years in May since my diagnosis. Yep.
And he'll be 28 tomorrow.
Yeah, I turned 28 tomorrow.
Happy birthday, man.
When I was diagnosed. Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, birthdays are bigger when you're going through this.
Exactly. Yeah, every year is just another milestone. So, so what's kind of been going on with me? I just met with my oncologist yesterday, actually, and we discussed going back on maintenance chemo for me. So I had been doing chemotherapy every 2 weeks, doing a full Fox regimen, plus Avastin or bevacizumab is another name for it.
Mm-hmm.
But we decided that my disease is in a stable enough place right now that I can take a break from some of the harder chemo drugs, the oxaliplatin, which you've dealt with, and I know a lot of people like us have. happy to get off of that and just kind of do the 5-FU infusions and the Avastin and cut down on some time in that infusion suite.
I mean, and we're going to go over some of the terrain you've already walked through and the road that you've walked. So to be at this place, like, people don't really necessarily understand sometimes that stable is a beautiful place to be when you're walking the stage 4 life, right?
Yep. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. My oncologist suggested maintenance to me, and I, you know, it's something that you hope for, but you never really expect, or you really never count on it because you just never know. But yeah, feeling really lucky that I get a little bit of a break here. We'll see how long it lasts, but hopefully for a while.
Yeah, and we were talking before the show that you and I have a very similar disease profile. We have, you know, you've been 5 years fighting this with abdominal metastases.
Mm-hmm.
I've been 6 years fighting this with abdominal metastases. And I think the thing that people don't realize is, like, in popular culture and in movies and TV, like, when someone gets diagnosed with cancer, they it's either the person dies or they get cured. But you and I and thousands upon thousands of other people are living in this place where we are managing this as a chronic disease over a period of years. And that's possible these days because of, you know, the advances in surgery and treatment options. But I think people need to think about people like us who are, like, long haulers and, like, what this life is like. So it's just another great reason to have you here and to talk about sort of managing this disease over time.
Mm-hmm.
and the life that you can live with it, right?
Right, exactly.
So the people around us are the ones who make this life worth living, even in the face of tremendous hardship, which you certainly have faced. We have one of these people here today, but who are your main supports in this journey?
Yeah. Obviously, first of all, my mom. Just since day one, my number one supporter has been, every time I'm in the hospital, she's in the chair next to me. You know, she's been to every doctor's appointment and always by my side, always someone I can talk to and trust. And yeah, we've always been close, but this has just really brought us together in a crazy way. And then, yeah, second, my fiance Chloe, who hasn't actually been with me through this whole journey. We just met a little over 2 years ago, but I just proposed to her last summer. She's been taking over some of my my care lately and just stepped in and really done an awesome job. And I love her and really feel lucky to have her in my life. And then there's, yeah, if I had to name everybody, we'd be here all day. But
yeah.
my dad and my brothers and my sisters. I call them my sisters, but my brother's partners. They're my best friends, and they keep me happy, keep me busy, keep me with things to look forward to, and give me reasons to live life. And then obviously there's my little baby niece, who was just born in September. My twin brother just had a little girl who he actually was kind enough to name after me. Her name's Lainey, and my middle name is Lane. So that was just the biggest honor of my life, and I love her to death, and I'm watching her today, and I'm just so excited to have her around.
Amazing. And I follow you on social media and your family, and anyone who takes a peek into, and I know social media doesn't always capture all the, you know, mm-hmm. probably the arguments that you have and like the tough stuff, but you've got a big family. it does appear like a very supportive and loving family, and like the events that you've had, the love that you can see in your videos and photos is pretty awesome to see. And congratulations on the engagement. Finding love while going through cancer is something, you know, that we talk a lot about in Man Up to Cancer, because it's tough, and you've found that person. So that's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I feel really lucky, and you know, it's something I wasn't sure I'd ever get the opportunity to do. And I'm sitting here getting married in November and really looking forward to it. So thank you.
Oh my gosh, man. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And Joy, let's turn it over to you. So I imagine it's a lot of the same people, but who are your main supports in your journey as a mom and as a caregiver to Isaac?
Yeah. So for me, I guess my number one people would be Isaac's dad, my husband, Casey, and probably my sister, April. I think those two really love Isaac and are the same way I do, and probably come closest to just understanding everything, you know, that is going on and that we've been through and how challenging it really is. And then, yeah, I have two really close best friends. You know, I can vent to them about anything, cry to them, but they also make me laugh like no other and whisk me away on vacations every now and then, and that they're great in that way.
That's huge. That is huge.
It is. It is. And then finally, I have to mention Colon Town Facebook group, actually where we kind of hooked up with you, Trevor,
yes.
Full of colorectal cancer survivors and caregivers, and just how huge it is to be able to actually connect with another parent going through the very same thing with a young adult child. Like, that just is crucial to like getting me through this. And again, the evidence-based support they offer and really has gone a long way when I'm in times of like need and no one else is gonna be able to answer this question for me. I can reach out and, you know, they're there. So
100%. Thank you for mentioning that. Colontown.org. If you are listening to this and you are impacted by colorectal cancer, please check out that community. That's where I started that's where I met people who were going through similar challenges as me. That's where I learned most of my information about treatment options and science and evidence-backed, you know, treatments. So absolutely shout out to all the folks at Colon Town for the work you do. Absolutely amazing. And before we go any further, I have to interject. I have to let folks know that this interview today, I love this family so much, and I've never met them. We haven't, you know, spent time together, but there's a bond that you have when you're going through this that you just get it, right? And mm-hmm. I get what Isaac's going through. He gets what I'm going through, and yeah. It is just there. So what makes this interview doubly special is that the University of Iowa, right there in Iowa City. That's my alma mater. I had a tremendous college experience there a long time ago, 1996 to 2000. But as my, I tell my kids, like the whole other century. but yeah, so just one Iowa City question. I really enjoyed the airliner pizza when I was there. Like, is it still as good as it was back in the day?
Oh yeah, people go crazy for airliner pizza. Yep,
you go on half price pizza night. It's the best.
Yep. Oh man, I really have to get back there. The sad thing is, like, you know, just life, right? Like, 24 years have passed and I haven't gotten back to Iowa City.
Yeah,
and it's not for lack of wanting. It's just life and kids, and then cancer comes. So, but I really need to be intentional about getting back there, because I would absolutely love to walk down, you know, Iowa Avenue and see all the and share some stories with you that I can't really tell on this episode.
yeah, we'd love to have you.
Yeah, we would take you out for pizza for sure.
So let's get into, I want to ask you about treatment and surgeries, Isaac, then we'll dive into some more emotional territory. I just want to go over your Cliff's notes for surgeries and treatments. So if you could just hit on the major points of the things that you've gone through since your diagnosis.
Yeah. And mom, feel free to interject here, because I can't. Yeah, it's hard to keep everything straight over 5 years of everything, you know. But I got diagnosed stage 4 colorectal cancer with metastases to my liver and around my peritoneum back in 2019, April 2019. Got started. They put in an ostomy. That first visit to the hospital, then I got started with 6 rounds of FOLFOXIRI pretty quick after that, which prepped me for 2 consecutive liver resections over the period of a month or two. And then since then, I've had 3 cytoreductions and the HIPEC surgery, the mother of all surgeries, which you I've also been through, Trevor, recently, and which that was a tough one, but
oof.
Yeah, we got through it. Then on top of that, I've lost count of all the rounds of chemotherapy I've done, but it's got to be up near 60, 70 rounds over the last 5 years, probably. And then with all my liver issues, I've had upwards of 20 ERCP surgical procedures to get stents in my biliary ducts flushed out. And, you know, those don't seem like as big a deal when you've been through the stuff we've been through, but, it kind of wears on you after you get up in the teens or so. So,
man.
But yeah, I'm happy to be starting maintenance chemo soon, hopefully, and staying on that for a little while.
Dude, you are an absolute beast, because as people who aren't going through this just have no idea. Like, you just summed up in like less than a minute. I'm just thinking, like, people have no idea how difficult even one of these procedures is, let alone dozens. And so what you've been through physically and emotionally is beyond what the like average person could really imagine. And I just have to say that, like, it is, wow. And it's on the one hand, it kind of must feel like you haven't had much chance to just come up for air. Like, you're just, you're in it and you're just fighting, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something I've gotten better at as the years have gone by, is taking those moments when I get them to really appreciate the rest that I can get, or just the happy times and the family events, just those moments I can get where, like you said, I can come up for air and, you know, put all the cancer stuff behind me and just for a little while.
I often talk about the physical challenges of this journey, and the emotional challenges. So from a physical standpoint, how do you feel, like, how does your body feel now? And like, are you limited compared to what you were before cancer? And in what ways do you feel that, like, physical hardship of everything you've gone through?
Yeah. Definitely. It's definitely slowed me down a little bit. You know, it, I was 23 years old when I got diagnosed. I was playing rugby for the men's rugby club in town here. I actually played an 80-minute rugby game just a month before my diagnosis. I was in the best shape of my life, really. I had a physical job that I worked. I went after my diagnosis. I had to quit that. I had to quit rugby. After all the surgeries and chemo, I don't have the same stamina I used to. Like we were kind of talking about earlier, so many abdominal surgeries just moves things around in your body, and you don't have the same anatomy as a normal person anymore. And it's just that kind of affects you differently. And losing a foot of my colon, dealing with that, just the issues that come with that. It wears on me, yeah. And I feel good. I feel healthy and strong. I get out, and one of my favorite things to do is go on walks with my dog out. We have 20 acres of prairie. We just go out and walk for a little while, and I'm out, and I have a herd of goats I take care of. I pitch hay in the barn on the days I feel good, and I take care of the goats and chickens and run the chainsaw when I'm able to. And other than that, I try to hop on the exercise bike every now and again, and probably don't do that as much as I should, but I try when I can.
That's awesome. I mean, to still have that physicality and that physical nature after going through it is just amazing. And one message that I'm always talking about is, sometimes it's hard for cancer patients to compare themselves now to what they could do before cancer. And I know that I've struggled with that sometimes. But then to shift that into celebrating what we still can do, and it sounds like you're doing a lot, man. So
Yeah, I
that's great.
try. Yeah, I try.
So let's move into some emotional questions. Like I said, anyone who follows you on social media knows you have a very close family. You talked about it earlier. It's a really beautiful thing to see. Were there stages of how the family as a whole reacted to your diagnosis, your early treatment, and then all that's happened since, like after it became clear that this is going to be a marathon, like you're not just going to get treated and then be done with it. If you could talk a little bit about how the family has sort of coped with this or handled it over the years. And Joy, maybe you could start with that.
Sure, yeah. Of course, the initial diagnosis was just total shock and devastation for all of us. I'll never forget the first time I left Isaac's side after hearing that diagnosis and actually walked out of the hospital. And I think, I've been holding it together for him to that point, and it just really hit me, just the sheer panic and fear. And went home to get more stuff and came back to the hospital and just got into fighting survival mode, really. Like, had to get him through with that those first rounds of chemo so he could have that life-saving surgery. And it was just all hands on deck, and then just learning and doing all I could to help him with that. Again, ColonTown right away was a lifesaver for us. Isaac's really close, like you've mentioned, to his two brothers, Clay, his twin brother, and Logan is 6 years younger, so he was just a junior in high school at the time. And I still worry about the impact of all this on them too. Obviously, a lot of my attention has gone to Isaac, and I've continued to work as the one who provides all the health benefits too for my family. So really, I've counted at times on our family, friends, our community. They really rallied for us, especially early on. And then, yeah, as it became clear this is going to be a marathon, and we're like managing a chronic health issue, like you said earlier, right? We really just had to get good at taking things just one day at a time. Like, it just is too much. Otherwise, if you get too far ahead of yourself, So I think we've all done that. And it's weird when you reflect on like what you get used to dealing with and what just becomes kind of like normal. And sort of higher line of like what is worst case scenario keeps moving, and how you can still find things to be grateful for in the midst of all that, pain and suffering. So, I think what's helped us, through the marathon piece is just trying to really commit to living life, as best we can between, all of that. So.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that first phase is always just shock. Especially because he was 23. Like, I was 41 and it was still shock for all of my family and friends. But, you know, he's 23 and the shock must have probably even lasted longer. Then you pretty much go into a phase of doing the work, right? like adjusting, doing the work. And then, you know, coming up on 5 years, like, I think about the word acceptance, right? It's a tough word in my circles and my family. Like, I don't know that it'll ever be okay, but I think there is maybe a move toward acceptance. How is that like for you? Is that something that you're moving towards, or is that just something that's like still way far away?
Yeah. I mean, I think I have come to be more accepting. I still, you know, I hold on to hope that, like, if we can kind of like keep managing this, there's something that's going to come through.
Absolutely.
One day, you know? And so, we keep fighting and doing what we can, and, you know, new things are coming out all the time. And, like, yeah, there's the reality of it all too, right? And the numbers, and even though the numbers don't, you know, don't represent each individual, and especially someone who is so young and a body who's so capable of like taking on so much, right? Like, that is the reality that like this is a lot. And
yeah, I mean, and I guess when I think about acceptance, I'm not so much of like that of death, but more of like, this is our lives. And because I think a lot of people can dwell on that, imagining if things were different. And we all do that, right? Like, I think sometimes, like, what would my life be like if I didn't have this diagnosis, like, for my kids, mm-hmm. forever, for myself, for everyone else? How much, you know, what is that like for you? Like, are those some thoughts that come, and then you just get back into, like, this is what is?
Yeah, I think you nailed it right there. It's hard not to have those thoughts, especially when you're my age and, you know,
yes.
23 years old, it just throws a wrench in everything. But like you said, I try to just live in the moment. I try to focus on, this is what I can do now. I don't know what I'm going to be able to do 3 months from now. I don't know what I'm going to have to do 3 months from now, but I'll take care of that when I get there.
Yeah.
But for now, I'm going to deal with this and make the most of this situation.
Yeah. Beautifully said. I mean, that's the one thing is like, when it comes to like envisioning the future, planning, mm-hmm. like thinking about those things, like that all gets, you know, for my wife and I, it's like, what does that look like to mm-hmm. us? It's very much more present. It's very much more short term. And that's not that we don't dream about it. Like you said, like anything can happen, you know, with science and with what we're doing. Like, we could keep extending our lives, hopefully for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But you just have that uncertainty. Like, that uncertainty just kind of dominates. Like, well, we don't know. So what can we do right now?
Right.
Yeah. Isaac, do you want to talk about like, what have you seen from your family in terms of like the phases? Where do you think they are now in terms of just, and it's hard to be that guy. Like, even with my friends, like I'm cognizant all the time that I'm still the friend who has stage 4 cancer,
mm-hmm.
and you just want to take that away and have people think of you as just Trevor or just Isaac, but that's right. It's just not possible. Right. Like, so I guess that's not really a question, but just as I talk about that, like, what mm-hmm. comes to your mind, Isaac?
Yeah. And that's always something I've struggled with since my diagnosis, is like, when I meet a new person and they don't know this about me, because looking at me, you wouldn't assume I'm a, you know, cancer patient. I'm
yeah,
going
same.
Through this treatment. So like, how does that come up in conversation? Do I tell them? Do I just wait for them to kind of learn it themselves or figure it out? And it doesn't really matter to me. You know, when I met my fiance on our first date, I told her, like, I had to be straight up with her that this is my situation. This is what, you know, you'd be getting into if we, you know, started this thing. So, yeah, I guess just dealing with it, accepting it, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, it is tough because, like, we don't want to feel different, right? We don't want to be different, but we are. And how do you manage that? It's a constant thing for us. So let's move on to this idea of like independence and sort of what usually happens for American Midwestern guys in their 20s. You know, at age 23, I imagine you were spreading your wings as an individual. You're gaining some independence. You're pursuing your dreams. That's not to say that you're not tight with your family, but you're 23 years old and you're setting out almost. And then all of a sudden you become a stage four cancer patient, and you are forced into a circumstance where you have to depend on others to help take care of you. How difficult was that for you? And now that you're, how old are you now? 27, 28?
28 tomorrow.
Right. 28 tomorrow. So now that you're 28, when you think back on that and about that theme of just like kind of losing your independence in a lot of ways, what was that like for you?
Yeah, it was really difficult. And I didn't always handle it well in the beginning and in the middle a few times, and even now, you know, today. So, but yeah, I was 23 years old. College didn't really work out for me, but I had just found this job in agriculture that I really liked, and these new coworkers I really liked. It was hard work, but you know, it was physical and I enjoyed it. That's kind of right up my alley. Like I said, I was playing rugby. I was as fit as I've ever been. And I was, you know, planning on moving into this nice new place with my brother and his girlfriend, who's now his wife. And then all of a sudden, you know, I was moving back in with my parents, and I had to quit my job that I, you know, I just got a promotion, and I had to quit playing rugby, which was something I loved, and just the community that they've been supportive of me, but I just haven't been able to be around them as much. And that was really, really hard for me to deal with that. And I just really have to thank my parents for, especially that time I was living with them in the beginning. I was just, I felt like I was really volatile probably. And just the ups and downs that came with things, you know.
Well, super common, man. Like,
yeah.
I hear that when I talk to guys in their 20s, it's one of the themes that comes up all the time. There's anger. There's volatility. So I hope that everyone, that you especially, are giving yourself grace around that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's something that I've gotten.
Volatile for Isaac is like rolling his eyes a little bit. So he's just like such a, I mean, you were not. You're just fine.
Go ahead. Yeah. Joy, why don't you tell us what your perspective was. I mean, your son, he's got a new job. He's playing rugby. He seems to be doing well. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you have to take care of him again.
Yeah. You know, in addition to that shock and fear I talked about earlier, as a mom, you know, you feel a lot of responsibility, of course, and even guilt, you know, from day one. As parents, you're supposed to keep your child alive and safe, right? And so I wanted him home. I wanted to take care of him in every way I could, right? And really that tension of like, he, you know, is not wanting to be home and being taken care of, and he needs to be. And so that was tough, that tension, balancing, you know, my responsibilities as his mom, as his primary caregiver, as someone who actually, you know, works in the health care profession and at the hospital where he gets treatment. A lot of people were looking to me to, like, you know, run a lot of the show. And so, you know, I could get caught up in like being an overbearing, worried, annoying mom, you know, too. And so he's saying, no, I wasn't, but I was, and I still can be too. And we have moments and we talk through it, you know, eventually and can get to the other side
of
it.
Back off, like, mom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Have you seen that now that he's, you know, turning 28, Isaac, have you been able to feel more independent over these past couple of years, or are you still in the same place in terms of feeling dependent?
Yeah, I've absolutely become more independent. I started my own small business. I have a herd of goats, and I make soap, and I work farmers markets and stuff like that. And that's kind of been a way for me to carve out a space for myself and in that field that I had kind of just been discovering.
Goosebumps, man. That's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. We built a small, we call it a barndominium in the shed out behind my parents' place. We built a small apartment in there from scratch, pretty much, me and my dad and my grandparents and the rest of my family. So I'm right down the hill. I'm not too far away, but I have my own space now. And like I said, my fiance has been kind of taking over some of the caretaking aspect of things and going to appointments with me. And I'm a lot more comfortable in the healthcare space, you know,
Yeah,
managing my own
right.
care and understanding the language and meeting with a different host of doctors that you got to meet with and kind of organizing everything. Which was, you know, skills I didn't have when I was 23. I
Yeah.
probably didn't go to my most recent physical I was supposed to go to before my diagnosis. And you know, I felt healthy, so I didn't feel like I needed to go to the doctor. I didn't really have the tools to deal with that diagnosis initially. So having my mom who could navigate all that with me and for me at times was just a lifesaver. And I really credit her with, you know, me being alive today. I think she's been a huge part of my success throughout all of this.
How does that make you feel, Joy?
Yeah, obviously I'm welling up here with some tears. Yeah, I mean, of course, wouldn't have it any other way, and just glad that he's, you know, allowed me to care for him in any way I can, so.
So let's talk about caring for you, Joy. And this is always right. My wife and I struggle with this all the time. Like, where's her self-care? What does that look like? And all those feelings of guilt, or can I have fun in this life, right? Can I take breaks? So when I did a Q&A with you way back in 2020, when I sort of started Man Up to Cancer, you said you were always known as the strong one and the caretaker. It's hard, you said, quote, "It's hard to admit I am struggling and need help. I could definitely use more growth in this area." So several years later, have you been able to bring in more help? Have you perhaps been able to add in some more self-care to your life?
Yeah, it's like, you know, I'm the oldest daughter in the family, and a psychologist, so I'm taking care of people all day, every day, right? So that's kind of, yeah, who I am and how people know me. But I have gotten better at it. I've had to make some difficult decisions about kind of what I have room and energy for in my life, and I've stepped back from some actually fairly significant relationships, just because I, you know, it was too much to be giving, and I wasn't getting enough back.
Good for
And
you.
I adjusted some things at work, to set some more healthier boundaries there too. I've gone to counseling, would highly recommend that. Biased, of course, but found that to be helpful for myself. And I think I say no more often to things, allow myself to rest without guilt. Got someone to come in and clean my house once a month, you know, when I could afford that. And so things like that have, like, yeah, helped a lot over time. And then most recently, you know, I've stepped back from a lot of the caretaking as Chloe's fiance has stepped in. And so that's been a real big relief in a lot of ways, but also, again, challenging to sort of hand over some of that responsibility to someone else. And
Sure.
but you know, she's amazing. She's getting her PhD in genetics, and I trust her. It's not a matter of that, but it's just like, you know, I've been in there for all of it, and and there's a history to take into account and all that too of his treatment. So yeah, things have changed for sure since 2020, and I would say mostly good ways.
That's great. Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that. I mean, like, care for caregivers is something we barely talk about in the cancer community. It's second, right? Always second. And you can't be a caregiver. You can't, and you can't be, a whole human without really taking care of yourself. And it's great to hear that you feel like you've made some progress there. That's wonderful.
Yeah, thanks. It feels better.
So I want to get into the kind of the area of colorectal cancer being on the rise for people under 50, under 45, in their 20s, 30s, even younger sometimes. So more young people than ever are being diagnosed with this. And it should be shocking to people. Like, it should just be like, what on earth is happening here, right? Like, so the stat that I always like to put out there is that a person born in 1990 has twice the risk of colon cancer and four times the risk of rectal cancer than a person born in 1950. Why? Like, what is going on? why aren't we devoting more resources, more money, more attention to answering this question? And I guess what I want to ask you is, in the 5 years that you've been facing this as a family, have any of your doctors, any of your providers, anyone outside of that offered answers to that question? And Joy, why don't you tackle that one?
Yeah, not really, no. I mean, he didn't have any genetic, you know, background or history. He, you know, the things they throw out there are sort of the same things they think, you know, contributes to colon cancer at a later age, you know, like diet and activity. And you know, most of the young adults I know who have ended up with this are healthy and, you know, active.
Exactly.
And he's not like he actually wasn't someone who was like drinking in high school or anything like that. He wasn't doing anything any different than like, you know, and probably better than a lot of kids his age. So, actually, one thing that really helped early on was that his doctor told us that there was nothing that he could have done to have caused this. Like, this is just no way anything, you know, could have at this time in his life. Like, you know, and we, you know, that wasn't his fault. And I go back to that a lot because you're always searching for
100%.
Like a why, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people like to like say that like this was, you know, why in someone's behavior this happened, right? So that they can feel more in control of avoiding it themselves. But yeah, it's hard also not to know. I don't think we've gotten a good answer on that, and we need more resources and research put to that for sure.
And you have met other parents who have younger people going through this as well, right?
Yeah.
And same thing from them. They're just it's unexplainable. So if anyone listening to the show, we need to create more movement on this issue. You know, there's tons of spending on trying to treat it. There's a lot of spending on diagnostics, but no one is paying attention to why this is happening. Or maybe they are, and they're just not like, I don't want to dive into a conspiracy hole here, but like, how can we not be answering this question? Like, this is a dramatic increase in a certain type of cancer for younger people. We need to answer this question. So I'm just going to leave it at that. If anyone out here listening to this can push this forward, knows people to talk to, please have this conversation. This is unacceptable that someone like Isaac at 23, you know, has his life just completely radically changed because of this disease that he should not have to face. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Trevor.
All right. I get fired up, but I'm going to get focus myself and get back because we're almost toward the end of our show. You are not escaping the gauntlet of random questions. And I have, I did not provide these in advance. You have no prep. And this is the Gauntlet of Random Questions, Iowa edition.
Okay. I'm ready.
But before we get there, kind of a last question. When we talk about some general advice, like, do you have some general advice now that you've gone through this for 5 years? So from the lessons that you've learned in that time that you would share with a family who has a young man specifically, and I'm talking like, you know, even like 18 to 30. So a young man who is diagnosed and they're just coming into this. Do you have some advice for them? Joy, why don't you think about that one first?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you have to try to find that balance between allowing people to help you and maintaining some sense of independence. And that's a really tough one for a young man. And also, I think for men and how they're raised, you know, right now in this culture, like to be vulnerable, to talk about stuff that's happening with their bodies, right? Especially with, you know, colon and rectal stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like that's hard stuff to want to talk about. So to be willing to be vulnerable and open with the people who care about you and that way too, so they can help in any way that they can.
That's great. Thank you for that. And what about, and Joy, let me follow up with you on that. What about, we know we've talked about Colon Town as a resource to like guiding you. But what about like, yeah, like the nuts and bolts, like how to deal with this? Like, do you have any, if you guys were just coming into this today, do you know what you do, like in terms of how do people find where to go in terms of like getting treated, I guess?
Yeah, well, I definitely recommend going to an NCI, you know, cancer center, somewhere that's, you know, got that academic backing. And especially for someone who's young with this disease, people generally aren't going to see that out there who are practicing, right? And so you need really specialized care.
Yeah.
And a place that has different specialties too. You know, he's needed radiologists and oncologists and, you know, internal medicine folks and palliative stuff. And so, like, you know, a hospital that's really going to offer all the things you're going to need to fight this care, I think, really important.
And you have an NCI center right there.
We do, University of Iowa. Yep. Yeah, great place. Mm-hmm. It's been, and then, you know, get second opinions too. We've also gone up to Mayo and you know, University of Wisconsin and Cornell, and, you know, so we've gotten second opinions when we need them too, and that's been really
critical. I mean,
as well.
Anyone who listens to my show knows that this is like a huge issue for me. Get second opinions. Get more teams to look at your scans, look at your reports, look at your case. The more eyes that you can get on and the more specialties that you can get looking at you, the more information you're going to have. And sometimes hospitals don't agree on on what the plan of action should be. So you have like, you know, two or three opinions, and then ultimately like the families generally have to make the decision, which is something that you don't think about when you're getting into this. Like, you think someone's just going to tell you what to do, but I've had three very different opinions on course of action from two NCI centers and a local group. So it's like, yes, thank you for raising that again. The value of second opinions is absolutely huge. And men in general tend not to seek second opinions because they think, well, my local oncologist knows just as well as anybody else around the world. And we can't blame them for that, but it's just not the case. So thank you for that. Isaac, what about you? For the young men out there who are just diagnosed, like, do you have any guidance or advice for them?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say find ways to keep living your life. You know, keep doing the things that make you happy. And that might change. You might not get happiness out of the same things that gave you happiness before. But, you know, keep chugging along. There's a quote from an old German poet, Rainer Rilke, I think is his name. And I probably won't get it right exactly, but it's something like, feel everything, beauty and terror, just keep going. No feeling is final. And that just sums it up for me. That's kind of been what I've lived by, that it reminds me that there's beauty to suffering. There's good moments in the worst times. And if you can just get through those worst times, you know, there's going to be something better on the other side. And just being in those bad times makes you appreciate the good times even more. So just stay present, stay focused, and live your life. Don't be so caught up in surviving that you forget to live.
That is absolutely spot on advice. Thank you for sharing that. I'm going to take that clip and put it everywhere because it's really important. It's really important. So thank you for that. And also kudos to you for raising awareness. I know that you've done several, you know, whether it's news appearances or other appearances, and on the one-on-one level, I know that both of you have made an impact on others who are coming into this space, especially for the young onset colorectal cancer community. So I just want to say thank you for your work in doing that.
Yeah. And thank you for everything
you
do,
Trevor.
You've been an inspiration to us too. And just following you has given me a lot of hope, and it's been great to know you. So thank you.
Yeah. Oh, same back at you, man. I mean, it's amazing. Your journey has really been amazing. And the parallels that we're facing in terms of like the surgeries and things, I'm fortunate that I have not had to deal with a lot of the liver stuff, man. That is like a whole other addition to everything you've gone through. But yeah, we definitely have walked a very similar road at different points in our lives, right? Like, I had younger kids, you were just starting out. So I think, you know, let's just continue to support one another. And I'm always in your corner, and we can just keep this going, right? Like, I expect 5 years from now, we're going to have another conversation.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's plan on it.
Looking forward to that.
All right, it is time. We're going to finish up with the Gauntlet of Random Questions, Iowa edition. I have three Iowa-themed questions for you.
Cool. Let's hear them.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Number one, this is multiple choice. What Iowa town, actually, you might guess it, but if it's not, I'll give you a multiple choice. What Iowa town is close to a crater impact site from a meteorite collision from 74 million years ago? Do you want to take a guess, or you want to give me, or
I
do you
know
want me
this
to?
one. My
Oh, he
fiance would
knows
kill
it.
me if I didn't. She went to Luther College in Decorah. Is that the answer, Decorah?
Well, I don't the answer. Well, I'll give you three. That's not one of the answers, but
Oh,
I think
okay.
maybe it's right near there. I don't know my I besides Iowa City, my Iowa geography is not great. Let's just put it out there. I'm gonna say Centerville, Storm Lake, or Manson.
Oh man, I don't know. Do you have a guess, Mom?
Is Manson up near Decorah or Storm Lake? Yeah, I think you got us, Trevor. I don't know.
The answer that I have, according to this trivia site, is Manson, Iowa, is home to a
Manson.
crater impact site, but I'm going to go with Decorah because you probably know better than I do.
Well, I think Manson is near
Yeah,
Decorah, so
maybe.
yeah, I think we get a point there,
You get a
right?
point. You
Yeah.
get a point.
Half a
All
point at
right.
least.
Question number two. What number is worn by Caitlin Clark, the Iowa star who now holds the all-time points record for women's college basketball?
I know this.
That one's
Yeah, you
easy.
know this one
Oh,
well.
they're
I do
saying it's
have
easy.
it.
Okay. What is it?
22.
Twenty-two. Number
Yeah, she's my
22.
favorite.
Order your gear today. Yep.
February 24th, Caitlin Clark Day in Iowa. They just made it official. Or
Love it.
22nd. Is that, did I say 24th? That's my birthday.
22nd. Yeah.
22nd.
You know, when I was at Iowa, there was no excitement around any of the teams except for wrestling. So,
Yeah.
there you go.
Yeah, we always got wrestling.
All right, the last question. What age is Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa?
Too
Yeah.
old.
He's not triple digits yet,
He's
is
got to be
he?
pushing. No, he's
I'll, if
pushing
you get if you
90 for
get with
sure,
if you get
though.
within 3 years, I'm gonna get you full credit for this point.
Oh,
Oh,
man.
89?
Okay,
Yeah.
Joy's going 89. What's Isaac going with?
I'm going to go 91.
Well, they are right all around it. You guys get the full point because Chuck Grassley is 437 years old. No, just kidding. He's 90. He's
Okay,
90 years old.
yep.
He is 90 years old. He is still in the Senate, unless he's been replaced by animatronic Chuck Grassley.
Yeah, who knows?
So you got, I think, you're 2.5 for 3,
I'll
is what
take
I'm
it.
saying.
I'll take
So
it. Yeah,
you get big
cool.
stars for that.
Great.
Oh man, I always love ending on a high note. This has been an awesome conversation. Thank you for taking the time. And definitely, I hope to circle with both of you at some point in the future. I'm not going to wait 5 years. It'll be sooner than that, and we'll talk about other stuff. But and if you need any support, if there's anything that Man Up to Cancer can do for your family, please don't hesitate to reach out. We are growing. We don't have an Iowa chapter yet. We have one in Illinois, Minnesota, kind of all around there, but the chapters are just in their infancy. So I expect we're going to be hitting Iowa pretty soon. But seriously, if there's anything we can do, let us know. And love to both of you and your family. And KFG.
Yep, KFG.
Same to you, Trevor.
Thank
Thanks.
you.
Thanks, Trevor.
Thanks for listening to the Man Up to Cancer podcast. If you want to get behind our mission, you can connect with us, subscribe to our email list, and check out our other content at manuptocancer.com. And if you know a man struggling with the isolation that cancer can bring, let him know about us. The Wolfpack doors are always open.